Hi, boys and girls. Like you, Santa is listening to the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com.
Happy Thanksgiving, Merry Christmas, and welcome to this, the Merry Little Thanksgiving episode of the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com. My name is Jeff Westover, the lead turkey at the Merry Forums of MyMerryChristmas.com, where we are celebrating 30 years of celebrating Christmas and Thanksgiving together. This episode of the Merry Little Podcast is brought to us by the Christmas Hall of Fame, a little endeavor we have been talking about all year long. Thanksgiving Day is the big moment for the Christmas Hall of Fame, as that's the day where we say thanks for the very best of Christmas. All year long, fans vote, and on Thanksgiving Day, we announce their inductees into the hallowed halls of the Christmas Hall of Fame. Be sure to stop by and register to vote and see this year's winners and nominate new candidates for next year at ChristmasHallOfFame.net. I'm ashamed to say that I spent some time this week looking back, and I'm appalled to see that it's been 3 years since we have talked about Thanksgiving. I don't know how time has so quickly slipped away from me. So I went back and I listened to all the previous episodes that we've done on Thanksgiving, and I cannot help but note how Thanksgiving has changed so very much in just the last few years in the way that people look at it. Oh, really, I shouldn't say people. I should say specifically the media and corporate America, two of my least favorite things in the world, and the way they flip-flop on the topic of Thanksgiving. Of course, our present condition with the pandemic is necessarily giving us a very different Thanksgiving this year. I'm content to let people deal with it how they may. After all, Thanksgiving is something that happens within the walls of our own homes. I trust folks are smart enough to make prudent and wise decisions about it all without me butting my nose inside those walls. And I think everyone from doctors to the media to governors and others who think that it is their business, well, they should all just kind of butt out. That's not the world, of course. Regardless, Thanksgiving, my friends, is just like Christmas. There are good ones and there are bad ones. There are years when we can be there, and there are times when the world takes us away. Whatever you've chosen to do, whether it is out of an abundance of caution or just because the world has put lousy options before you, we are sure that you've made a good choice about Thanksgiving this year. I likewise would hope that among your choices for Thanksgiving this year would be a good serving, as is tradition, of gratitude, and that you've chosen, despite your circumstance, to be happy. But if you've got some Thanksgiving angst to burn, let me churn you up just a little bit more. What follows is brought to you courtesy of two of our media superstars of the 21st century, The Atlantic and The New York Times. Both major publications this week have told us to, well, stop celebrating Thanksgiving. To that we say, hold on a second.
What a slogan, take an Indian to lunch this week. Show him we're a regular bunch this week. Show him we're as liberal as can be. Let him know he's almost as good as we. Make a feathered friend feel fed this week. Overlook the fact he's red this week. Let him share our Quaker oats, 'cause he's useful when he votes. Take an Indian to lunch.
2, 4, 6, 8, who do we tolerate? Indians, Indians, rah, rah, rah. Take an Indian to lunch this week. Let him sit right down and munch this week.
Let's give in and all do the brotherhood bit. Just make sure we don't make a habit of it. Take an Indian to dine this week. Show him we don't draw the line this week. We know everyone can't be as American as we. After all, we came over on the Mayflower. Take an Indian, not a wooden Indian, but a real-life Indian.
That's the great Stan Freberg from his History of the United States of America album, which is great satire from nearly 60 years ago, 1961. He did it then for laughs, and very successfully so. But every bit of satire ever published is funny because there's a lot of truth in it. His argument then, as is the argument of many today, is that the Native American was not present at the first Thanksgiving. Now, Stan Freberg is dead, and doctors are pretty sure his condition probably isn't going to change. But I gotta wonder what he would think of the New York Times, who got downright blunt this week in suggesting that we shouldn't be celebrating Thanksgiving because the Charlie Brown version of Thanksgiving never actually happened. That's right. They're upset that the Puritans didn't actually take an Indian to lunch on that fabled first Thanksgiving. The Atlantic, a dreadful publication that once called the Christmas community online a bunch of weirdos, has said that Thanksgiving is just plainly racist. Now, we've made no secret over the years in our podcast and publications of declaring the history of Thanksgiving to be inaccurate, understated, misunderstood, largely untaught, or even taught incorrectly. We have talked about how the first Thanksgiving was not actually, well, the first Thanksgiving. We have explored how the practice of Thanksgiving was actually a British practice that did not grow from a tradition of harvest festivals, but rather of government declarations of victory or good news that actually called people to prayer and to celebrate while taking time off of work. It was kind of like a floating holiday, if you will. We've pointed out that a public Thanksgiving could be declared at any time of the year, and that history shows it was sometimes called several times a year in some places. Now, when it comes to the Puritans, we've explored the Bradford Journal, the letters of Edward Winslow, and the records of our Puritan ancestors and their pilgrim cousins to the south in Jamestown. We know that their Thanksgiving celebrations did not automatically become a yearly thing in 1621. But by the time of the Great Migration of the 1630s, and how it swelled the ranks of Yanks in New England, it had become a spontaneous annual November celebration made famous with pumpkin and, of course, with turkeys. We'll get to turkeys in a minute. In fact, we're going to myth bust, if even in a painful way, the history of both turkeys and, well, Native Americans at Thanksgiving in America. Let's tell some truth first about the Indians, natives to the land, we think, if only because they were here already when both the Pilgrims and the Puritans arrived. They weren't at that first Thanksgiving. Why? Well, it's simple. The Native Americans of New England were not friendly to Puritan settlers. Maybe they were just a little ticked off. Maybe they were upset. Maybe they didn't like turkey. But it is true. The Puritans weren't fond of them, and the Native Americans weren't sending the Puritans any of their Christmas cards either. Well, why am I being so flippant about this? Because Thanksgiving has never been about Indians and turkeys. The New York Times and the Atlantic want them to be because it serves their 21st century political agendas. Well, let's just cancel Thanksgiving for them, shall we? Native Americans, they tell us, don't like our celebration of Thanksgiving. Well, that's not true to the Native Americans I talk to. Most Native Americans understand that in American culture, Thanksgiving is about the acknowledgement of bounteous blessings at the hand of God, and they're really okay with it. In fact, they have similar celebrations in their own culture that dates back thousands of years. But maybe the Puritans and Native Americans of 17th century New England did not powwow together at Thanksgiving. I think it's a stretch to say that they didn't, or that they did. After all, the Puritans didn't carry firearms to church because they went hunting between hymns. You see, this is the history they don't want to talk about in the conquering of America. Both the Puritan and Pilgrim populations came to conquer. They wanted the riches of the New World. They didn't make any secret of it then, and they didn't hold back in taking it from the people who were already here. The Native American population was also pretty hard on all early American settlers, and there began centuries of conflict in the early 1600s that took lives from both sides, and it was brutal. There were atrocities to be found up and down the eastern seaboard, and that continued out to the American West well into the 19th century. That was both a way and a fact of life. and it had nothing to do with Thanksgiving. Yes, what happened in time to Native American populations is important. It's tragic. There were no doubt times when they were betrayed by the broken promises of the white man and the lies of a worthless U.S. government. True as all that might be, it has nothing to do with Thanksgiving and our celebration of it. Not then, not now, and not ever.
Gobble, gobble, strut, strut, shake your feather, shake your butt. Turkey time's here today, so celebrate in every way. Yeah, I was born and raised in the countryside. Why you wanna eat me? Ben Franklin says I'm America's pride, so why you wanna eat me? Well, the pilgrims came and still my faith when they shot me down. Put me on a plate, and wouldn't you rather have a steak? Why you wanna eat me?
Earlier this year, we took a look at Christmas during the great pandemic year of 1918. I told you then of a very personal story, as that year my great-grandmother lost her life at the age of 20 to the Spanish flu pandemic of that time. The USA Today had an article this week that portrayed Thanksgiving 1918 as a time when people just checked it at the door in hopes of killing the virus of that time, and they presented some media proof to kind of back up that angle. Well, the national push to kill Thanksgiving in 1918 was nothing like what we are seeing today. Of course, their pandemic was hundreds of times worse, mostly due to the lack of medical technology then that we have today. When this whole pandemic started, I can recall predictions of millions of Americans losing their lives, and I think, tragically, we're only up to about 300,000 at this point. Of course, they didn't have the internet then, and the 24-hour news cycle, and the endless stream of misinformation in the form of social media that we have today. But beyond the medical differences of that pandemic, there was, of course, an entirely different political situation that fueled the drama of the time. Most notably, the end of the First World War and the returning of soldiers from France, many of whom unknowingly brought the virus with them of that time. The USA Today article actually is a very good one, and I find little to dispute with it. However, I cannot say that my study of Thanksgiving 1918 revealed near as much saturation of the pandemic of that time as the USA Today article suggests. Do you know what I see? I see a greater focus on Thanksgiving as a time of gratitude. While the news of the time carried stories of the spread of the virus and the need for folks to curtail large gatherings, there was a greater emphasis I'm seeing by the media then to proclaim gratitude and to share blessings. Where do we see that in the media today? The city of New Orleans, for example, had in their newspaper a headline claiming, quote, "City celebrates Thanksgiving Day as never before," unquote. Businesses were generally suspended and churches were reportedly packed. Curious about that report and unable to find any kind of media support for the cancellation of Thanksgiving in 1918 in New Orleans, I decided to see if I can find out just how bad the virus got there. And it turns out it was pretty bad. It was awful. Between September 8, 1918 and March 15, 1919, there were 3,300 plus influenza-related deaths in New Orleans. Nearly 1% of the city's population was wiped out, and that was about twice the national rate. What was the difference between then and now? From what I can see, there were unexplained waves of the virus that struck the city. Many of the same headlines we see now. Businesses closed, medical facilities and staff overwhelmed, increases in sickness and death. These were the things in their newspapers in October 1918. Then, inexplicably, the virus stopped spreading. They opened up to celebrate Halloween. They flooded churches and streets on Armistice Day. And they celebrated both Thanksgiving and Christmas while enjoying the diminishing rate of infection that they had hoped for. The virus seemed it was gone until January 1919, when it came roaring back with a vengeance. Then, as now, all precautions, all the causes, all the cures, all the numbers were argued. And the mask thing was definitely argued as well. What was not argued? Well, Thanksgiving and Christmas were not argued. In fact, in every media source I could find, these holidays were both declared as necessary and vital to both public health and mental health in 1918. You know what else was hot? Thanksgiving debate in 1918? Well, it stemmed from the fact that some wanted a world holiday, a single day of Thanksgiving and rejoicing, and the date of November 11th was the date that they wanted. well, we call that Veterans Day now, or Remembrance Day in some places. It was suggested, debated, and argued that the American Thanksgiving could be merged with this day, which could then be changed into something that they called World Peace Day. Here is what the New York Evening Post had to say about that. Quote, "It is bad to have two holidays near one another, and those who want a great annual world holiday to mark the end of the war naturally propose to merge our Thanksgiving Day with it. But would not Thanksgiving Day be rather submerged rather than merged? To our very Thanksgiving turkey Toastmasters would attach references to the ending of the food rationing of that great war. Americans have 2 days in particular that are all their own, the 4th of July and Thanksgiving, and to both belong associations that ought not to be disturbed. Even if the religious character of Thanksgiving were retained when joined to World Peace Day or whatever the new day were called, the tendency would be to return thanks for one rather than all of the blessings that, after Puritan's precedent, we are wont to remember. The subconscious mind of mankind may be left to select its holidays out of the war's great dates," unquote. But were there public debates on not gathering for Thanksgiving that year? Was there an outcry of the encroachment of government on the sanctity of the home? Was there direction to have only so many people in your home or to wear masks when gathering for dinner? No, there wasn't any of that. Not even a little. The focus, rather, was never on the mechanics of Thanksgiving or gathering for it. It was on the purpose of Thanksgiving. And that, kids, is the real lesson of Thanksgiving in our American history. It's never been about turkey or pumpkin pie or whether Native Americans were or were not invited.
Over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house we go. The horse knows the way to carry the sleigh through the white and drifting snow. Over the river and through the woods, oh how the wind does blow. It stings the toes and bites the noses, over the ground we go.
Over the river and through the woods, now grandmother's cap I spy. Hurrah for the fun as the pudding done, hurrah for the pumpkin pie.
Over the river and through the woods and straight to the barnyard gate. Spring over the ground like a hunting hound, for this is Christmas Day.
Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas. Hark, the bells are ringing, hear the children singing. Merry Christmas,
Merry Christmas. Merry, Merry Christmas and a glad new year. Merry
that song, presented from the early 1950s by Danny Kaye with the Andrews Sisters, is based on a poem written in the 1840s about Thanksgiving. Well, we've told you the story before of a children's author and progressive activist named Lydia Maria Child. Her poem and this song was based upon childhood memories of Thanksgiving with her family, something that had happened decades and generations before she was born. This is one of the unique beauties about Thanksgiving in America. It's truly American, born from the dust stirred up by pilgrim feet, a true American institution that can never be forgotten. So to the Atlantic and to the New York Times, we say this.
Gabba, gabba, go! Go, go, bingo!
What you've just heard is a super edit of sorts of entries from the Gobble Contest held recently at the Merry Farms of MyMerryChristmas.com. We urge you to head over there to vote on your favorite among the brave souls who took up the challenge of giving us their best gobbles. The Gobble Contest is just one of many ways we try to come together in our celebrations of Thanksgiving and Christmas. After all, turkey is an all-American rite of passage at Thanksgiving, and that's the other myth of the first Thanksgiving that we want to talk about. We land squarely on the side of turkey being present at the first Thanksgiving. Yes, we know nothing in history actually mentions turkey specifically, but we know from the letters of Edward Winslow that Puritan men were sent out fowling for the Feast of Thanksgiving that year. We don't think he meant to say quails, chickens, or pheasants, though some of those I'm sure could have been included. The fact of the matter is that both the Puritans and the Pilgrims found the New World to be teeming with wildlife. There were plenty of fish and crabs and lobsters in the sea, and plenty of meat to be had on shore. turkeys were abundant in New England. And we have enough records and recipes from the mid-1600s to know that turkeys were a thing every harvest period. Likewise, we have covered this many times here before on the Merry Little Podcast, there is the issue of pumpkin and pumpkin pies that were a thing as well. Now, this might seem trivial to you, but to me, a pumpkin purist, I was really upset when I read in Southern Living magazine this year that the Puritans did not exactly have pumpkin pie. Now, why does Southern Living say that? Because they think, for some inexplicable reason, that they did not have pie crust in 1621. I kid you not. Does anyone in our modern media even do the slightest bit of research? Here's a memo to Southern Living. Not only did they have pie crust for the first Thanksgiving, but they also had bread, too. And why? Because they had flour, despite what your article says. It's in countless journals and histories from the time. I've talked about this before. We have an ancient family recipe for pumpkin pie that dates from the 1660s in Windsor, Connecticut, from our first generation American family. They ate turkey at Thanksgiving, and they ate pumpkin pie with crust. Doggone it. It's in the recipe. Thanksgiving, as a holiday, was not so declared until 1870. That is when the American government got their crap together when it came to holidays, kids. At the same time, they set the great American calendar by saying that Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's, and the 4th of July were all American holidays. They said that, formally, in 1870. But because they hadn't declared it before, that doesn't mean that we weren't celebrating it as a nation. Thanksgiving really started in 1621 because that's just the first record of it. But as the history of time gained momentum with the Great Migration of the 1630s, so too did the traditions that would come to be called American. And they picked up steam as well. And that would be Thanksgiving first, followed by Christmas. Up next is a great song by an artist who heard our last episode of the Merry Little Podcast featuring new music of 2020 and sent us her great new song. It's called I Saw Santa Last Night, and her name is Robin Scott.
I heard Santa last night. I saw Santa last night. Santa last night, and I was sitting in the kitchen wrapping up some final gifts, sipping on some eggnog, a little cup of cheer. And all of a sudden, up on top of that roof, what is this crazy ruckus that I hear? I heard Santa last night. I saw Santa last night. Well, I couldn't believe my ears, but I couldn't deny my eyes. I saw Santa last night. Santa last night. I all say until last night.
Thanksgiving and Christmas go together like, well, turkey and cranberries. And I only bring it up because since I discovered my New England Puritan ancestry, I've become well aware of how they viewed Christmas and Thanksgiving together. Christmas wasn't abolished or banned, as historians tell you. It was sacred, and it was celebrated differently in New England. Thanksgiving wasn't about food. It was about family and kicking off the holiday season, and that's an idea I just love and try to emulate. Sometimes in the practice of Thanksgiving, we discover a little Christmas, and that happened to me the other day in helping my grandsons record their gobbles. With the tape running, so to speak, my 5-year-old grandson told me this story I had never heard before. It happened to his wondering eyes last Christmas Eve under my own roof. Jax.
What?
You saw reindeer last Christmas?
No, I heard jingle bells last time Christmas.
You heard jingle bells where?
When we were downstairs last time, when we were sweeping with Aubrey and Ryan, were sweeping with us down on the floor, and we were sweeping on our beds, and we heard jingle bells.
Aubrey and Ryan had reindeer downstairs?
No, we heard some outside.
Jingle
okay,
bells.
Okay, you were downstairs.
Do.
Are you sure that was jingle bells?
Do it again.
Yes.
That sounds like an ambulance.
No, it wasn't.
Do the sound again.
It wasn't. It was do. And I thought it was a phone, but it was jingle bells. And then hear some too. And I hear some too. And I hear the sound just like, ho, 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 Merry Christmas.
I am so fortunate to share my Christmas last year and again this year with children. My grandchildren have been a real blessing to me during this year of lockdown, and they have created Christmas magic for me, as you can hear, as we try to see Christmas through their eyes. The recipe for such is not hard to learn, as we hear in this classic bit of Christmas from our friends on the Merry Forums.
"'Twas a night before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse.
The stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there.
The children were nestled, all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads.
And Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap.
When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter.
Away to the winder I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters, and threw up the sash.
The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave a luster of midday to objects below.
When what to my wondering eyes did appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer.
With a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick.
More rapid than eagles, his courses they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name.
Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer, and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner, and Blitzen, to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall. Now dash away, dash away, dash away all.
As leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle mount to the sky.
So up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with a sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas too.
And then, in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof.
As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney, St. Nicholas came with a bound.
He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot.
A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack.
His eyes, how they twinkled! His dimples, how merry! His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry.
His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard on his chin was as white as the snow.
A stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke, it encircled his head like a wreath.
He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly.
He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself.
A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread.
He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work, and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk.
And laying his finger aside of his nose and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose.
He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle.
But I heard him exclaim ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
That little work is our first edition of our 'Twas the Night Before Christmas readathon. We hope to put more of these together this season and beyond. To participate in our next edition, please visit the page we have dedicated there for this activity and upload your reading to the Merry Forums of My Merry Christmas. And we remind you that if you are an artist with music or stories of Christmas to share, please do not hesitate to contact me at jeff@mymerrychristmas.com to share your Christmas creation with our audience. May you have a joyous and pleasant and peaceful Thanksgiving. And we invite you, once you put down the fork, to take up the mouse and join us at the Merry Forums of My Merry Christmas to celebrate Christmas together with us 365 days of the year. And for all of us at the Merry Forums, this is Jeff Westover wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas.